You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network. Welcome to Prosperity for God's People, brought to you by ChristianTraders.com, the Internet's fastest growing Christian investment community, created just for you, the Christian Investor. Everybody's happy. Striving for excellence in Christian talk radio, excellence in the world financial markets, and most of all, excellence in your personal walk with God.
Broadcasting live
from the CFRN studios in beautiful downtown Phoenix, Arizona.
Monday, 23rd day of August, 2010. My deepest apologies for the extremely late start of the broadcast. It's just 43 minutes late exactly, so we're going to just jump right into this thing. Father, we thank you for today, for your blessings, your mercy, your grace. God, we're just humbled by your presence in our life, by the opportunities that you give us to serve you, the opportunity that you give us to live larger than ourselves, God, to be focused on you and your kingdom and the world and the needs of the world, and for giving us the understanding that if we'll get our mind off of ourselves and our own situations and our own problems and just focus on being a blessing to someone else, that, Lord, when we're not looking, you just kind of slip in and take care of us, and we're so dependent on you for that now once we tap into it, and we want to stay focused on that and never lose sight of the goodness that you bring to us, God. Just help us continue, Lord, to be that blessing to other people all the days of our life. Father, we pray for our military, all the brave young men and women, God. We pray that you comfort them, that you keep them safe, that you bring them home victorious. Lord, we pray that those floodwaters in China would recede. Pray for the families of the missionaries that were killed in Afghanistan last week, Lord. Father, we could spend this entire program circling the globe, talking about issues and problems that exist in this fallen world. But we're going to make a choice and a conscious decision to not focus so much on the problems. We won't ignore them, God, but our focus is going to be on you. Because no matter how big the problem, we know you are always the solution. So today we find great joy in that fact. And it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. All right, guys. Second time in forever we didn't get a proper opening devotional. So please forgive me. We'll get right on that tomorrow. Let's have a quick look at the numbers. The Dow is up 1.5. S&P is up 0.28, okay, quarter of a point. Comp is down by, it's like 11. Here's our zone action over night. Here's the Sunday night open on this candle here. You're looking at a 30-minute chart. London open right here. We caught a bounce to the zone. Pull back to the 21 EMA, and then off the open here, we spike the zone, and then roll it right back over. And now we're in the zone for, well, at least an hour. Don't know how much time of this candle was spent in the zone. Quick review of last week. We did a really nice job. And again, you can't become seduced by weeks like this, because the zones are just areas that we anticipate the market making important decisions at, like here. All these, you know, I can't really show you this because this is last week's zones. There we go. We can review last week on last week's chart. Decision here, here, here. And you get this. And then what's it going to do here? It took a lot of time, but it made the decision. Took some time, made the decision, spiked it a little bit. And then, and we talked about all of this last week, so just this back and forth action. But this, while a lot of these moves were just kind of picture perfect, it's not always going to be quite that picture perfect. Now, interestingly, and this is why I always say hang on to last week's zones, because here's last week's zones on this week's price action. I always keep the last week. And we'll watch over the course of this week how this week's price action lays out on last week's zones. Now, of course, we anticipate that this week's zones will be more relevant to this week's price action. But it's not a bad idea to either have a chart or just, you know, a list lying beside you there where you're able to, because when the market starts making turns in areas that maybe don't make sense, oftentimes you can refer back to last week and get some why. Okay, here's last night's open on the YM, and just kind of a mirror image of the action. We run to the 10.274 off the open this morning. We pull back to the 10.200. A little more of an overshoot here than what we saw on the ES. I want to welcome all of the new members. We had quite a few sign-ups last week. Hope you all made it into the room, the live chart session, okay. Again, my apology for the late beginning. Just could not be helped, and I couldn't get a message out to you to let you know that I was going to be late. So, anyway. Now, I was asked in a series of emails on Friday to start tracking the E6. Which on trade stations, the ECU, and this is really preliminary, okay, this is the beginning of the session last night, this is today's session, and so far, okay, we got 12645, we got 12488 down here. We've got 12802. So I'm just going to let this chart run for the week, and I'm going to watch how it unfolds. This is actually a 30-minute chart. I want to see how my trend lines work and my different moving averages. And just, I've never really looked at this, but I promised that I would and that I would establish some levels. And so that's where I'm at right now on that endeavor. Let's go over to the 10K. All right, I left these levels on Friday just because there was a couple of interesting things, and then I'm going to take them off because it'll just get way too cluttered. Going into the close on Friday, we were in the chart room, we were watching the market, We had this beautiful descending channel. We hit the zone. We began an ascending channel. When we had these three, one, two, three, once those three candles were in place, we drew this trend line, which then allowed us to create a channel. And it held again, and it held again. And what we were looking for was it to break here and give us a short entry, because we were looking for a bit of a weak close on Friday. But it never did break down. In fact, it started to go sideways, and I was able to say that same thing, we're running out of time. And so this, we said, would give us a perfect short entry. It did come out of the bottom of the channel, but it never really made it past the bottom of the weekly trading zone. So there's a little tail that came down, but just not enough to trigger us into a trade. And then it began to just chop back and forth, back and forth. So I did the old triangle, and then sure enough, on the overnight last night, bing, it popped right up out of that channel on the open. Here's where it gets interesting. Remember the ascending channel we had? What does it do? It hits it. And then it comes back, and what does it do? It hits the weekly zone, which is also that trend line. Pops back up. This is coming out of London's open and into the open session this morning. It hits the trend line again, back to the 21. Back to the zone, which just so happens to still be the bottom of that price channel that we drew. Remember, that entire price channel, and right now we're really only dealing with the bottom, the trend line. It all came 10:54 exchange time on Monday morning. We had three pieces of information. One, two, three. Based on those three pieces of information, and it was based on the fact that price had moved from this zone into this zone, and now it looked like it was ready to make the return trip. Okay, let's track it. Let's see if it is going to make the return trip. So we drew three lines, extended our trend line right, and not only did we extend it right, but it's continued to be right. And the fact that, you know, it crossed here into this weekly zone, and price ran to here and then reversed. Call it chance, call it happenstance, call it geometry, call it a parlor trick, I don't know. You can call it whatever you want. Now, remember this? Remember, I did this triangle because we were going to see into the close how the market would pop. I was typing all kinds of things on the screen. I said, this will let us know Sunday night which way the market wants to run. Because we had this triangle action tightening up into the close right here on Friday. So sure enough, long term Sunday night, bing, we get the big open. Did the trend line, which is now resistance, back. So that's all very neat and very clever. But then, what I find interesting is that we pop into, this was never created for that. You understand, this was a triangle here to see which way the market was going to break. But because I extend my trend lines right, once we traded down into this thing, so you trade down in, and you pop, now that's resistance. Down, down to the tick. And we're still working the zone. Now, we were debating exactly how much time we'd been in the zone, but we can get a better idea of contracts. 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. I don't know if you really want to count these. 80, 90, 100, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. About 170,000 contracts have been spent in this one-point range. We keep dipping out of the bottom and then popping right back into the one-point range. And volume so far today is 938,000. So out of 938,000, almost 200,000 have been spent chopping around this one-point range, trying to get some direction, being held by... Yeah, I'm not even sure what you call that. It was a triangle on the other side, but once those points crossed and opened up in the other direction, I don't know if you would call that a funnel, a pennant? No, it's not a pennant. Maybe you call it a funnel. Alright. So I got some questions going on over here. We'll see. Dwayne, don't you also have a weekly number this morning at 77.50? I don't think so. Copy these levels over wrong. Let me go check and see what I sent out to everybody. Yeah, this might have been supposed to be 77.78. Yeah, let me check. I may have mailed you guys out the wrong levels. Or maybe I mailed them properly and I just sent them. I gotta find the email I sent to myself. I've gotten quite a lot of emails since last night. Okay. Here's my email. Yeah, thanks for pointing that out, Keith. Doesn't do anybody any good to talk about the wrong levels. Okay, 98, 99, 83, 84, 77, 78, 69, 70. Yeah, 77, 78. Whoops. Hey, thanks for pointing that out. All right, let's go back and see how this affects things. Yeah, still shot over it right there. Let me see if I got it right on the other chart. Yeah, see, I had it right on this chart. 77, 78. Thanks for pointing that out, Keith. Somehow when I went to put them on the... Or did I, in fact, change them on this one? 69, 70... Oh, that's what happened, is I never changed them over here. That was going to be one of those things I did this morning, I guess, that I never got around to doing. Oh, I guess we better fix that up. The 6970, I guess I got that one changed, and that's the only one I changed, so 63, 64... Thank you. right, so we got 41, 42, 55, 56, 64, 69, 70, 77, 78. Okay, so above 77, 78, we need 83, 84. Alright, I suppose if I was one easily embarrassed, I'd be blushing and all red and like, oh my god, I messed up. But things happen. Didn't affect that. Note to self, when setting up 30-minute chart, also go set up 10K chart to avoid future snafus. All right. Okay, now I'll go back to the questions. Well, that wasn't Keith. That was Light. Okay, Light. Thank you. I'm just calling you Keith. Okay, Keith. Now, this is how much I know about the euro currency. I've got the little tab down there. I'm calling it the E6. And Keith humbly says, I think it's the 6E. Okay. I'll fix that. I'll change it around. No, my email did not have a 7677. Not this week. It did last week. I got my last week's levels here. Nope, not even last week. So for those of you that are in the room, you already should have gotten. This is the list. This is the email I sent out last night. Right here. So if anything I've put on the charts does not match this, it should be the email you got. And this will be the one I post tonight after I go back and recalculate and make. I was so on top of things too, man. I was calculating early last night. Oh, here we go. No more wine for breakfast. Amen, brother. Yep. Strictly orange juice and coffee from here on out. Sometimes you have listeners that are paying attention. Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, we got through the questions. Let's see if any of our staff are in attendance today or yet. Nope. All right, Bert, Leslie, David, Michael, other Michael. Any of you guys, as soon as you're ready, pop on in here. We'll see what we got cooking. Look at our daily. Let's see. Data correction pending. I don't know what the data correction pending would be. This, I know that today for reports, this is the Forex Factory, which has this really nice economic calendar on their homepage. And I guess if we're going to begin to learn to trade the euro currency. And I understand that we have some folks hanging out in the live chat room now that do trade the 6E, not the E6. And some of these reports coming out of these other countries will have significance. But in the U.S., the only thing today is a medium impact expected when FOMC member Honig speaks. I guess that already happened. Is he the dissenting member? More hawkish than expected, good for currency. All right, I hear someone in the background there.
Just Leslie.
Hey,
how are you doing?
Great. How are you doing?
Kind of a quiet morning, Dwayne. I guess Fed Reserve Bank President Thomas Honig just said that the viability of community banks is threatened by policies that have conferred too big to fail status on larger banks and reducing their cost of capital. And he goes on. Basically, they have all these Federal Reserve scheduled dates whereby each of these officials will speak. We get a calendar. It's I don't know how much we pay attention to them.
Really?
Yeah, I wonder oftentimes because, am I echoing, by the way?
No, you sound perfect on this end. Why are you
echoing
back on yourself?
I feel like I'm echoing. I can't hear it exact, but there's a slight almost echo. But his comments really didn't address the Fed monetary policy. He just talks about economic outlook. And so I guess there's not too much going on. I mean, the big thing is probably to short the euro currency as far as trades of appeal go, and of course on the rallies, you know, to short the E-mini S&P as far as what we can see here. As far as the gold market, we were even possibly considering some shorts there simply because the market just seems to want to back off. Again, my mark on the gold, my turning point, my major resistance is about 1243, and it just seems to be pulling back from that number constantly, and so I don't think it's ready to go. I think it needs to sell off before it can reach higher ground. What are your numbers this morning on the E-minis?
Well, there's been some confusion over that.
Really?
I had some numbers on one chart and some numbers on another chart, but it appears I sent the right numbers out in the email last night. But we got 69.70 on the downside, and that's kind of where we've been just, you know, chopping back and forth now for hour and a half, I guess it is, almost 2 hours. And then above us we've got 77.78. And if this 69.70 area breaks down, then we have 63.64.
Right, I could see that. I could see that. In my mind's eye, I had
10.58. The low on Friday afternoon. I'm sorry, Leslie. What was that again?
Oh, my number was like for today, 10.58 on the downside, potentially.
10.58. I got a number down to 55.56.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So that's still a good area, and if the market gets going from here to there, then it sets up the opportunity for a nice trade.
Yeah, absolutely. And the euro currency, it's a funny situation because sometimes we can trade that inversely to the dollar, but then as of today, if you notice, the dollar's really not doing too much either, and so that inverse relationship that we kind of count on sometimes is really waned on certain days like today.
What can you tell us about that? We've had a number of listeners. We have some new people who've become a part of the chat room, and they have an interest. They trade this market. They trade it under the symbol 6E.
Right.
It's referred to as
Mini.
The 6E, and on the TradeStation platform, the symbol's ECU. What's the symbol with DT Pro?
DT Pro symbol for the mini euro currency. Let me think. That's G. It's E7 on our other one, but DT Pro 7E. 7E. You could try that one and see if it pops.
7E.
It's What's funny is it's confusing because there are different mini euro contracts, and so sometimes we'll accidentally put on an order with the desk, let's say, and they'll put another code in, and so we'll have a long and a short that don't match up, and so we have to offset them at market to get out. So it's kind of
would you guess that our listeners are trading the mini as opposed to the full size?
I think a lot of traders, because of the cost and the efficiency of, you know, trading with a minimum margin and some of the benefits of trading mini contracts, I think a lot of people are trading the mini euro currency. And the volatility, the risk, you know, it's a lot easier to trade. What's funny is I look at this market as what happened when this product came about. We no longer traded the Deutsche Mark, and it eliminated that contract completely. And it's really funny to look back because the Deutsche Mark was a fabulous item to trade, and now we just have the euro currency. So the adaptation to it via the futures markets and the forex markets, it really is, you know, you can trade it so many different ways, and it has a lot of volume. It has a lot of movement usually, and it's a pretty decent market to trade.
Some of the listeners are making comments that the mini and the micro don't really have any volume.
The micro wouldn't, no.
Yeah.
But the mini euro currency we do trade, and I don't have too many problems with it. I don't pull the charts on the mini euro currency. I will quote the big contract, and I will pull up the charts on the big contract, and then it will be the client's choice whether he wants to trade the mini or the big. But when I put in my limit orders on the mini euro currency, I can follow, and I get hit on the same points that, you know, I strategize with the client, and I haven't had any problems whatsoever.
And getting a comment, range on the 6C is usually 2 times the ES volume. 6EU0 is the symbol for what these guys are using on DT Pro and on the DT Pro demo.
That's funny. On my chart, I have 6EU10, and so
I punched in 6EU0. Did it ever launch the thing? 6EU.
I don't know.
There we go. Yeah. Okay.
That's the big. Yeah.
And I'm just trying to see if my chart. See, my chart and price are not tracking exactly right.
Do you have 126.73?
I have 126.73 on my DT Pro execution platform.
Uh-huh,
but on my TradeStation chart, I got 126.71.
Okay, that one probably is a different contract of some sort.
Well, it's supposed to be the same. theory.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I can see where that right there would present, you know, an issue. Now, maybe one of these is the mini, and one is the full size. But shouldn't those still be tracking at the same price?
No, they don't necessarily track at the very same price. When we go in for the mini contracts, the prices shown will be a little different. And
now suddenly
that's
mine
why
matches.
Use.
Now, for a moment, it matched.
Okay.
I got 73 on my chart and 74 on my platform.
Yeah, as long as you're using limit orders to get in and out, and you should get your price. If you're using market orders, it might be a little bit of a variance. But with limit orders, you can pretty well track it, you know, track one through the other. But again, it's always best to look at the charts with the most liquidity and strategize from there. It's very difficult to look at a chart with a lot of specs and try to develop an opinion of the formation.
Well, I promised the listeners that I would look at it and study it and see if it's something that we can trade on the show and trade live. I'm just from looking at it, it appears that the majority of the action takes place off the London Open. So by the time I come in to start the show, it's kind of wound down a little bit. So maybe
for this... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I guess they want me to come to work earlier.
Oh, that would be very, very difficult, huh? When you have a schedule. You probably take your child to school and have a schedule where you and your wife get together for breakfast, and you know that would really upset the whole work for you probably. But you know what you can do with the e-mini euro? Oftentimes, if you look at 3 o'clock in the morning, you'll see certain trades, or you know certain periods of the wee hours of the evening. And so, if you can plot and strategize with points that you wish to get in. Like, let's say we're looking at the market, 127.30 is the high of the day. So best thing to do is to anticipate, okay, the market is trending downward, so perhaps you could, as you do with your e-mini S&P 500, put in your pivot points, and basically, let's say 127 might be a potential sell there, or and you could kind of work off of that with still with your technical points, but they'd be hit in the evening hours because of the market and the traders that do trade this market overnight from all over the world.
Now, a listener points out that on the DT Pro platform, which I have running, I don't know if you're able to see my charts right now or not, but on the DT Pro platform,
yes.
Price on the execution dome is 126.73, but over on my charting platform, it's 1.2673. The decimal point is in a different place.
Oh. Yeah. Well, okay. That's been a problem. Come on, look at our grains. You know, we've got the quarter, and we have to adapt to that all the time. For years as a broker, I had to figure out new contracts and, you know, how they were quoted exactly. And still, people that have been around for quite a while still quote them differently. So it's a kind of a funny thing, but each platform might be a little different, you know, in that sense of the word. But you kind of have to know that it's one, just visualize it as 1.2673.
Okay. All right. On the, I got to admit, the decimal place being off, that seems a little, because.
Annoying?
Well, no, not so much annoying as, let's see, 1.26. Yeah, it's just. Okay, what does it cost to trade? Now, we're talking the euro, so are we still trading a contract? Are we trading a lot? What are we doing here? What's the
euro
proper terminology?
Euro is a contract, but it is a cash-settled market, I believe. The euro is cash-settled, right? I believe it's cash. You think it's deliverable? Let me look it up.
Well, I'm just curious for the terminology. Is it called a lot? Is it called a contract?
Right. Yeah. The contract size, everything's pretty standardized, much like the other currencies.
All right.
Okay. It is a deliverable contract then, yes.
Okay.
So you do have to be careful to be out by first notice day.
All right. I got to send David Williams a really quick text. Check your email. David, there's a new link and a new password each week. So I'm just, hang on, guys. I'm typing in. Check your email for link. Of course, I'm trying to send a text, and somebody's trying to call me. Okay, David, I just sent you a text. It's got tells you to check your email for the link, and that also contains a password. Okay, Leslie, how much margin involved to trade one of these contracts, lots, whatever it is?
Usually, I think it's a couple thousand margin.
Really?
A euro.
Intraday or overnight?
The large. Let me look it up exactly. One moment here. I'll get you the exact. I should have it right in front of me, but for some reason this morning, every time I come in Monday morning, I clean my desk for the weekend, and then I can't find anything, of course, coming into...
I cleaned my desk last night. I mean, I polished the glass. I have a mahogany type of desk with the glass on top, you know. And I was really feeling good about everything. Cleaned my desk, got everything filed away, even polished the glass, and then end up showing up a half an hour late to the show today, so... The best laid plans of mice and men.
Uh-huh. Well, my house is such a job. I clean before I leave the office so that I can come into a clean desk on Monday, and otherwise during the week it's a bit of a mess. So the big e-mini, or the big euro, is $4,050. The mini is half, which is $2,025. To put on. So.
Yeah, see, for me, that presents an issue because I can trade the S&P E-mini intraday for, what do I pay intraday margin, 580?
563.
560, okay, yeah.
Right. So it's a more expensive contract, absolutely.
Okay, I guess we got some heavy hitters hanging out in the chat room now.
Yep.
Let's see.
Well, the moves are so enticing. Let's face it, you know, this thing started, let's chop it up here. We started, on the E-mini, we were at 133.33 August 6th. Now we're at 126.72 on the big contract. That's $1,000 every move. So it's a nice contract to trade. The trends are very nice. So, I mean, it has a lot of appeal for a trader, but it is more costly. And it's not something you want to just stay in for a tick or two. Like the E-mini, typically traders will want to take a position, you know, and pinpoint their high, like let's say 127, and then stay with it, see if it works out. You know, with a stop above the high of the day, something like that, more so. Very difficult to just intraday trade this particular market, I think.
I'm sorry, say that again, it's very difficult?
I think it's more difficult to intraday trade the euro. in other words, the moves during the daytime can be a little choppy. And so I feel that when you have, let's say, the overnight markets trading and the highs sometimes are established or the lows in the overnight, I think this is one that you might want to, you know, on the rallies, go ahead and just sell it, take a position and put in your stop and then earmark a little more money for this particular type of trade. Otherwise, you get chopped up too much otherwise, I think. The E-mini is a little better as far as trending intraday.
Well, I just realized that I am on my charting platform, I'm on delayed data. In other words, with TradeStation, I've got to pay some extra fee to get live data for this particular contract. Whereas,
you should not have to.
Well, yeah. Trust me, with TradeStation, if you want... You got to pay one thing for the, yeah, they fragment it up. And so it might only be an additional $5 charge, or in some cases it can be a $50 charge. But unlike what Daniel's Trading provides and what DT Pro provides, which is equal access to all markets if you have an account, TradeStation just does it differently, and they charge you by, like Michael Reed's New York Stock Exchange tick, that he uses the dollar sign tick. I had to pay extra money to TradeStation to have access to that. And so, yeah, it really is about the money over there. So, but that said, I'm on delayed data, so I can't expect my charting platform to match up with your execution platform, which is, in fact, real time. So at least I've covered that. Now I know why there's that discrepancy, is that I need to get on real time.
Well, or just use the charts provided, you know, for that market.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there should be quite a bit of action for the euro because the ECB, they made announcements last week that they're lending liquidity to the banks, you know, is extended, and that's showing that it's a weak euro and there'll be opportunities there. You know, every time I think they're trying to stabilize it a little bit, but nevertheless, it is kind of a good market to trade some of the ranges. Like, look at today, 127.30, 126.46. There's a little money in there to be made. You know, nice profit. So
I just launched a DT Pro chart on my screen, which now syncs up perfectly with the depth of market execution platform. And I can see clearly now.
Yeah. Well, you get used to certain chart forms and indicators, and when it's not perfect the way you've been used to, it's difficult. You could have the worst platform in the universe, but if you're used to that platform, it makes it difficult to change. We're always well aware of that.
Well, I got to say, the fact that I can just access any market whatsoever on your platform, once Michael gets his indicators all ported over for DT Pro, because I have a certain set of things that I trade with, and beyond testing and experimenting, I don't really go too much beyond that. I'm probably going to focus in more and more on using the DT Pro charts, because I think I can do everything I need to do to put on and take off a trade.
Dwayne, if you have certain programs or certain indicators that you're used to using, they can be imported into the DT Pro.
Well, Michael's working right now on getting his different indicators in.
Perfect. Perfect. That's just a matter of time then to get that in. And are you speaking of which Mike?
Michael Bork.
By Michael Bork, yes, and his particular indicators will be available in the DT Pro store as well. So people will. Oh, he has to. And Britt said he has to get back from the beach house, I guess.
Yeah, the large vacation will end officially this Friday, I believe. So he'll be back to business as normal and be on the show with us and all that good stuff. So a lot of comments coming in. A lot of people seem enamored with this because it moves and you get a lot per tick. I'll continue to watch it and track it, guys, and see what kind of trades I can find that work. Right. We understand you can't just directly import a TradeStation indicator into DT Pro, Jerry, but what you could do is they have a tool that converts the stuff. And so that's what Michael's doing now, is running it through the converter, tweaking it, and making sure that that it will work. So, there. All right, Leslie, so what else is going on?
The gold market basically it keeps bouncing, a little bit, but then it doesn't really give us too much. It can't seem to get past it. What's that? Oh, okay. Bert said custom to get. Okay, good.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
Bert's talking to me. He said to go custom on your. In other words, he sees what you're doing, and so he'll say things to me. So as we're talking, then I have Bert coming in this ear.
Gotcha.
So anyway, the gold market seems to. What? jump on. It seems to be trying to sell off. But yet it's being held up quite a bit. And then it seems like we're stuck in a bracket or a range on the gold, so it seems like we can't really get out of this unless we break through 1243 on the upside, or else we can come on down below 1200 to be able to jump in. We need one of the two events to happen, otherwise we're pretty much stuck in this range, it seems. There are times when you can make money in a market situation such as this, but right now it seems that it's kind of choppy and difficult to trade today for intraday trading.
And what have we heard out of Iran over the weekend?
Iran, let's see. Yeah, it wasn't really all over my screens. As a matter of fact, I have difficulty even finding anything on Iran. And so whether the media is trying to make it more obscure, or whether it's considered a non-event in the economic view of the markets, I don't know. But it's not appearing anywhere in my Reuters, really, under my... it's on the back page, sort of, you know? So I don't really have too much. Ambassador of Death compares to other drones, how Iran's... let's see, rattled a new saber this week, country's first domestically built unmanned aerial vehicle. Okay. Well, you know what? It's funny. We've always had arms, if you go back to World War II, do you know what drove the missiles back in World War II to help us with the war, Twain?
Say that again.
Missiles, and the fact that countries have been developing missiles for many, many years, and World War II. Do you know what? When our missiles were launched and they were at our enemies, and do you know what drove the missiles?
No.
Were you aware of?
No.
Pigeons. Pigeons were used.
Really? How so?
Because they trained the pigeons when they hit certain targets, they would get food, okay? Seeds, I guess. And mm-hmm. so that was our smart bomb of, I believe, World War II. If I'm not mistaken, I might have the history a little bit messed up, but the idea is definitely, it was something that did happen, that the pigeons, because they would peck, and they would actually steer the missiles towards the targets. As a matter of fact, those were used in helicopter rescues over large bodies of waters where they've lost people and it's very difficult to spot from air. Because of the pigeons having sharp eyes, they would go ahead and use the pigeons to locate people over great bodies of water. So anyway, but Iran has this missile that's, I guess, a little bit more elaborate.
Interesting. Why can't we just all get along?
I know. But we've always had arms, and so I think, you know, it's something that, well, the market's obviously not doing anything about, you know. I don't think we can do anything about this for the most part. So it's something that's in the news, but, again, it's nothing that's going to, unless something actually happens or there's you know, some kind of attack. I don't see anything going on too much with that.
Are you well-schooled and or have an opinion on the Hindenburg omen?
Oh, I saw that. I saw that on your... and he's blind.
He's blind. The guy's an expert marksman, and he's blind.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, that is incredible. Now, the thing is, we have a lot of people speculating on the market, you know, and time frames for which it might come down this fall, but that was one of the most interesting. For those that didn't read it, could you recap that a little bit?
Yeah, I could. I will. James Miecka, and Mike, it was Mike Reed who brought this to my attention. I was sitting outside of a bead store waiting on my wife Saturday afternoon checking email. And I guess they've been talking about it on TV now for a while, and I hadn't paid it any attention. The Hindenburg Omen is written by this guy. He's called the Blind Oracle. He publishes a stock market newsletter, and he's blind. And he's totally blind. You can watch a video off of YouTube of him shooting his rifle. The omen was triggered August 12th when new 52-week highs and lows exceeded 2.5% of issues traded on the New York Stock Exchange. The 50-day moving average rose and three other factors confirmed a confused market. And then it happened again this past Friday. Now, a lot of people give this thing a lot of credence. A lot of people say it's a lot of hooey. But you will notice that the gentleman behind it, who, again, is blind, on Friday, or last week, he sold all of
again,
his stock
is blind.
Positions. On Friday, now suddenly I have a huge echo. Or last week, he sold all of
again,
his
stock. Is blind positions. On Friday,
now suddenly I have a huge... Oh, that's why. All right, echo fixed. The second Hindenburg sighting on Friday, 82 new highs, 94 new lows, and then Saturday was the day that Iran... Okay. One of the main criteria for the Hindenburg omen is a negative reading in the McClellan oscillator, which tracks the difference between the number of stocks moving higher versus those moving lower. If the McClellan oscillator stays positive, there's no Hindenburg omen. So, could it happen? Could it? It's just a rare occurrence that all of these different things would come into play at the same time. So it's worth, you know, being aware of and staying in touch with. if you Google Hindenburg Omen, or if you click the link on CFRN.net, you'll get the Wikipedia entry, which walks you through all of the technical details. And you can go out to YouTube, and there's guys who prattle on for like a half an hour, walking you through every technical aspect. And, you know, there's a lot of doomsayers out there, and there's a lot of people saying that the whole Hindenburg Omen is simply a matter of curve fitting a lot of data. In other words, if you go back over a large enough sample of time, you can take any number of wacky indicators and they'll all point to something at somewhere along the way. So to then turn that into a predictive tool is an act of fantasy. However, I can't help but go back to the fact that this guy is an expert marksman and he's totally blind. So does that mean he can see things that maybe we can't see, or he can see things that even he can't see? I don't know. I'm going to watch. I'm going to watch and see what happens. But if it's true, if the Hindenburg does ignite, then the market crash could be quite substantial. So we've made everyone aware of it, and now we'll just sit back and watch. And a lot of our guests have had predictions for prices significantly lower than where we are now, even lower than anything we have for a weekly level. Going back to our daily chart, I think we were looking at numbers down around here, you know, potentially. David Williams has a quarterly number, I think, down around 940, 945.
Funny, I often wonder whether some of these events are forecast, or are they a result of a huge following of people that are looking for particular places to maybe short the market, or I often wonder which is the case. You know, in other words, is it a self-fulfilling prophecy because X number of people are looking at this particular man in terms of his forecasts and following them, and they decide to go short? Or is it because he predicts? In other words, is it predictive, or is it something that happens
that
because
becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy?
That is, yeah, that is part of my concern. Also, 1987, I was in the Trade Center firm that I was working in, and I was monitoring, you know, some of the activity back there because I had a lot of CTAs at the time, and I needed to watch the service and how that it was working. And 7 o'clock in the morning, the president of the firm, or CEO, one of the two at the time, he called down to the Trade Center. This was 7 o'clock in the morning that day, and I had no other knowledge that this was going to happen except for a meat trader that told me in the month of May. But this particular gentleman had called down to the Trade Center, and he had each desk pull together the amounts of shorts and longs in each of the indices and go through the money as far as, you know, how much money each account had. And so I have a feeling that somehow either a predictive type of forecaster might have come into play, or that there were substantial orders that backed up whereby through the exchanges that data was available to the clearing firms, or probably public information at that time, but everybody doesn't get that readout from the exchange every day. And so I often wonder, you know, if that doesn't come into play, you know, the fact that people can see the number of shorts and longs, let's say, the previous day, or that they have access to a forecast such as this.
Hmm. Now, David, would you like to weigh in on this weighty topic? David Williams. He likes me to quote him before he comes on.
Oh.
let's see. We're definitely going up from here unless we start to break down. Oh, wait, that's not David. Brighten your own corner of the world. How about that, David? Is that good enough? All right, that's not going to bring him out of hiding. He's logged in. He's just away from his desk or on another call or on another something. Okay. All right, Leslie, anything else we should know about? Mike Reed, are you out there? You coming in today? Today's Monday. Nope, I don't see Mike in the staff room. Mike, you got to check your email I sent you last night. It's a new link, new password. And I'm quite impressed with all the listeners who got their email, and the email service didn't fail us, and everybody got the new link and got the new password. Except I haven't checked emails this morning, so there may be people out there trapped in radio land that didn't get it. Mike needs new password. Yep, it's a new password every week, guys. All right, Mike, can you check your email? In the email you got last night, or maybe you're not on that list. All right, Mike, I'll resend it to you. All right, guys, bear with me a minute. Leslie, if there's anything else you want to add today or throw out there, go right ahead.
No, I'm really good.
Gotta find this link for Mike and email it to him.
We don't do anything today.
Which I'm almost done doing. All right, Mike, here it comes. It's coming at you right now. The link and the password, good for the entire week. So hopefully we'll see you in the room here shortly. And again, David, your mic is open and you're welcome to pipe in at any point.
Good morning, Dwayne.
There you are.
How are you?
Good.
Oh, good. Morning, Leslie, if you're still there.
Yes, David, good morning.
How are you?
Good.
Well, good. I've been listening to your market analysis and other items this morning. Leslie, are you bullish or bearish on gold? I'm sorry, I wasn't quite clear, or is it conditional?
It's conditional.
Okay.
It's bracket breakout.
Okay, bracket breakout time.
Yep.
Okay.
Can't do anything in the bracket except for intraday trades. We needed to break out of the bracket about 1243 or else to break through the 1200 to initiate some buying action.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's just going to probably stay in this range, you know, if we can't get
mm-hmm.
it.
How do you feel, if I could ask, about silver? Because silver is its own market. I know that silver and gold are sometimes viewed like the Dow Jones and the S&P. They're sort of a proxy for each other. But I'm not sure I think of it the same way, and I was wondering if you think of silver, or what do you think of silver in its position right now?
Well, I've got it up, and I think it's in a range as well. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it obviously... doesn't want to break out too far, but here's the thing: the silver latches onto the copper market sometimes, and
mm-hmm.
the copper will latch onto the equities, and so they can have as industrial metals, they will have a tendency occasionally to steer away from the price of gold as a safe haven product. So sometimes you'll see the relationships vary, almost like in waves, and
mm-hmm.
so there were times in the history. My history, where the silver was the big play back in the day,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
About 84. Well, it came out of the precious metals recycling business in 79,
mm-hmm.
and so where we had the chemical tanks for the pick up the X-ray film from the hospitals, and then we'd
mm-hmm.
pay them a small percentage, and then we'd break everything down in chemical tanks, and then for the gold, we had gold fingers that we'd pull from old computers, and we melt them down in a special environmentally friendly furnace, and then take them into the refinery. And so that was the business back in the day. And then I had gotten into this business back around 84. But the silver about 84 was a bigger deal than the gold, actually.
And I think it might have been because of the, if I'm remembering correctly, the Hunt Brother
mm-hmm.
silver run-up. Maybe some of the listeners aren't
yeah.
even old enough to know about the Hunt brothers, and they had a huge run in silver, which, if I remember, maybe went to $48 or $50 an ounce.
It was really, really high. I can't remember the exact number, but it was the one spike that silver had, the huge spike, and
mm-hmm.
I don't remember the exact pricing now. Unfortunately, memory doesn't serve me as well as it should, but.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that that's an important, does that leave anything for people to look forward to, the fact that it spiked up to those types of levels? Or in your analysis, was that a sort of an aberration and not to be really paid attention to?
It depends on Paulson, Soros, you know, some
okay.
of the big guys, to tell you the truth, you know, because they're the big players. You know, Paulson has a tendency to pull in, he's pretty much stabilized in his holdings of his gold, and Soros
mm-hmm.
actually was down a little bit on his gold holdings, but
mm-hmm.
on the silver also there are funds that as well, and so by that, and I think there's platinum now too,
mm-hmm.
so it really will depend on a lot of these big guys to see what they push and get. Any market, you can create a little momentum by buying rumors or by any world event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, let's face it. I mean, we could do that with rough rice or milk. We actually trade milk. So.
Right. No, I know. We do.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to mention that everybody has their own technical way of looking at the market. I think it's very important that they did reach those highs, and they do have meaning, because the market actually went there for whatever reason. You know, let's
yeah.
just say that, you know, somebody cornered the market, which, by the way, is fairly rare for people to be able to pull off a successful corner of a market, meaning that they kind of are the main impetus behind the move, and that they purposely did that, and that the market actually responded. You know, you have to have sort of a perfect storm of events to come together to allow that to happen, because there's so many forces at work in markets. So for one person, as an example, Warren Buffett, who's a huge investor and a very, very wise investor, longer-term investor, bought, was it gold or silver? I think it may have been silver on the way down, but he was very early. He, you know, it took quite a number of years before silver came back and made him break even on that investment. So he's a big player and wasn't really moving the market, even though he had bought close to $1 billion worth of, I believe it was silver, but I don't remember the exact, it's been so many years ago. So even him, I guess my point is that he didn't move the market very much in purchasing it, and he's an elephant. He's somebody who could walk in and spend a lot of money and move markets. So it's pretty rare that people corner the market, and so therefore, my point was that once the market is cornered and does go to these extreme levels, it's interesting to see if people value those levels, if they think they may be important for later either price levels that could be achieved in that market or in some way some other technical analysis, whereas some people simply look at it as an anomaly and sort of wipe it off their screen and just get back to trading the way, you know, the market is now. I happen to believe that because we went up there, that we are going to need to go up there, not to the full high, not necessarily to test the actual high that we made, but to a level nearby there. I don't have that level in front of me, Leslie, but I happen to believe that silver is in a position potentially to do that. It's not an outright forecast, but that at some point, we don't work in silver, but in some point, I believe that we will have to see those levels again. Not the highest levels, but some levels nearby there, which I could calculate, but I don't have silver up and I don't have all that.
Well, if you
so
had a
everybody
friend,
has their own way. Go ahead.
If you had a friend that had a large interest in a silver mine, would you be willing to calculate those levels?
If you had a friend or that you do have a friend?
Well, I know this guy with a ponytail
okay.
that does a radio show every day.
Oh, I see. And he's got kind of like a little following of people that follow his market wisdom and his guest's market wisdom. And that guy owns a silver mine, and he might be interested in knowing what those levels are.
He owns a large slice of a silver mine. He's not so pompous as to say he owns the whole silver mine, but a fair portion of it. So, based on that, we would love to hear your calculations on
Well, Dwayne, you went away for a few moments there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
You're back now.
So, yeah, we'd love if you have time at some point, your calculations on silver. That would be of great interest to myself, and many of our other listeners are participants in that same company and have been for many years.
Oh, okay.
So,
well, I'll take a look at it. And, you know, it actually requires quite a bit of data to work out because in our work, time cycles are related to price levels. So we would have to go back quite some ways. Literally to before the actual Hunt Brother corner occurred. So I have to get data for that, which my data right now, I suppose we could purchase that from CQG or I don't know exactly how to get back that far on silver, but it would require that to try to tie those together because of the way that we do analysis. You know, it's each person has their own way, but we would require quite a bit of data to get back there. I do have data back to 94, and as you know, Dwayne, we put out that report, which I sent you a while back, and I forgot what year that was, either 98 or 2000 or whatever it was, where we were forecasting that silver could be bought at $4.24 down to $3-something, and because there was a huge, we thought, a big run-up coming. And we have had a big run-up, but there really is a potential for substantially higher prices. And I think I mentioned to you, I just want to mention this once again, it's kind of an interesting story, but Benny Binion, who is the son of the late father, I don't know his name, Binion, of Binion's Casino.
Right. I
out
saw
here,
that movie, that made-for-TV movie, yeah.
Yeah, which is, yeah, exactly, a made-for-TV show about his death. And without going into all the details, his death left his daughter with approximately $7 million worth of silver that one of these people involved in this whole thing was trying to steal. And so I emailed her. I tried to get an address for her through the newspaper and at least was able to get through to her attorney and was telling her that just even though she didn't know me, that I felt that she would be very wise to hold on to her silver because there was this rally that we were anticipating from that report that I sent you. And I don't know what happened. I never got anything back from her, but I hope that she was able to profit from some of this big move because at the time that her silver was worth probably $7 million, silver was trading around $4. So you can imagine it's trading at about $18 now, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
So, you know, it'd be hard to take somebody's advice that you don't know, and she still may have ended up holding it, but
I think it was his that ended up with it, wasn't it?
I'm sorry?
Wasn't it his sister that ended up with the silver?
I don't know how it finally turned out. They had a very contentious relationship, the sister and Benny. The whole thing was just truly an amazing story. For those who have an interest in it, you may want to watch that special. Maybe you can Google it or go onto YouTube or something and take a look at the story that took place with this Benny Binion, the son of the father that started the Binion's Casino out here, which still exists here in Las Vegas. And a really, truly unbelievable tale, the way that it unfolded. And it was in the news every day for quite some time. Because it was a long court proceeding going on. There was a lot of stuff going on. So, and all the players that, it's almost like the O.J. Simpson thing in California. This was our O.J. Simpson thing out here in Nevada. even though O.J. Simpson now is in Nevada, you know, in jail.
And will be for some time to come.
He probably will be for some time to come. That is correct. So,
how
he made a bad trade.
Today,
he made a bad couple of trades.
Can you hear me?
David?
Yes.
Okay. So the Hunt Brothers situation, we had an $11 silver that went to $50.
Well, thank you for looking that up. I'm glad I at least knew what the price was at the time. So they were starting at around 11.
Right. But then 2 months later, it went back to 11, and that's where Nelson Hunter, Bunker Hunt had wound up losing money actually then.
Yes.
So that was like it seems like because it's sort of like our flash crash, a flash rally,
right.
if you will. So.
In order for prices to go anywhere, though, and one way of thinking about it is to say there's really no unimportant price movement. Even though in a storyline it may appear unimportant because it was a flash up and a flash down. But in order for prices to actually trade at those levels, it has meaning, at least in our approach. So it means something. It can't be discounted, although there's probably nothing wrong with discounting it and saying, you know what, the market zipped up and it zipped right back 2 months later. And so it really was just sort of an anomaly. But, you know, in our work, if they've actually traded there, that means that there's an indentation, so to speak, and I hate to sound too bizarre by saying this, but there's an indentation in the space-time continuum. Prices actually traded up at $50. They made a mark. They dented reality up there. They really things actually occurred at those prices. Trades actually occurred at those prices. And in our work, because they actually did trade there, people did buy and sell at those levels at that time, it makes it important, and it does have, for us, a lot of value in calculating future events. I'm talking about any market now, but not just the silver market, but the fact that the prices went there do have important value for calculating future events. And I don't discount at all people who would discount that flash up and that flash down, because it may not have any real meaning for the kind of trading that they're doing now, and it probably doesn't for most people anyway. It's really something that we would use to calculate cycles and other things for the future and for the potential return of prices to not those highs necessarily, but a level below those highs, far higher than where we are now, I would say, as well. You know, being at $18 isn't nearly close enough to a number like what we're talking about.
Well, I think it has significance in a sense of, in terms of technical analysis, in terms of the momentum and analyzing the momentum of such a move. And of course, I look at it quite a bit more simply. I always look at it as sort of a flock mentality of entering the market, driving it up, and then simply you don't want to be the last one to bail out, you know?
Right.
So
right, exactly.
I just simplify the whole thing myself. You know?
I know. I need to do that more because, like I was joking the other day, sometimes I'm at the store with my fiance and we're in the vegetable section. I'll see the tomatoes are like 30 cents a pound, and I'll stand there. I'll say, honey, you know, they're putting in an hourly top here. I think they're going to be lower in a few hours, so let's just wait. I think prices are coming down in the tomato section. Anyway, so yeah, it can go. You can simplify things tremendously. One of the ideas that we work with is that every movement in the market, no matter what its cause, actually sends out a theoretical wave, and that theoretical wave gets returned at some point in the future. And that means every little blip up and down, 5 minute high, a 1 minute bottom, you know, where the market's turning, twisting, and back and forth, every single movement sends out a theoretical wave. And I mentioned this last week. In a way, it's kind of like thinking about karma, the Indian, Eastern philosophy that whatever you do comes back to you, or you have to deal with your own wave, so to speak. Another way of saying what karma is you have to deal with your own wave. If you put out a wave that's bad, you're going to have to deal with that. This is an Eastern idea. I'm sure you've heard of karma before. And the market presents us with a viewpoint that could be very similar to that, that every movement in the market sends out a wave that it's going to have to, it being the entire market, is going to have to deal with in the future. That wave gets reflected back. So that big movement that they did in 1980 or around that time, no matter what its cause, the fact is that that movement sends out a wave. It's a very large wave. The movement was very large, and therefore it takes a very long time for it to be reflected back as well. The time and the distance are all related. So this goes back to our three-dimensional view of the market. So we believe in our work that there is a returning wave coming back from the Hunt brothers. I have not calculated how it sets up and where it is, but that's one of the reasons we think the way we do is because we're able to time the market pretty effectively with the theory of what we call reflected wave, that every movement, again, sends out a theoretical wave. Simply having occurred, it sends out a theoretical wave. Just as if you were in a swimming pool and pushed the water, it would travel until it hit the side of the pool, and that wave would then reflect back and eventually make it back to where you're standing. And it's very similar with market movements. And so one of our techniques is based upon that idea. And I don't know if you were on or if you heard us mention that before, but I just wanted to explain it to you why we might think that that wave up to $50 is important. And if we were serious about silver, we could go in and track its returning wave, which would be for us a very important event as that wave intersected where prices are. So after you having explained so brilliantly why you keep things simple, I just went and turned it all complex again.
No, very eloquently, might I add.
Well, thank you very much. You're too kind. Anyway, we had talked about that last week, and I just wanted to mention that to you. I do like, and I'm sure you probably like, the metals markets. They're very volatile. They have a lot of action going on in them, and people want to be involved in those markets. And one of the things that we have going for us is great uncertainty because of our administration and many other things. I won't blame it all on the administration. But as long as there's great uncertainty, stay, in my opinion, just, this is very simple. This is almost like what Leslie's talking about. As long as there's great uncertainty, there's a high likelihood that gold's going to remain in a very bullish position. As long as there's great uncertainty, it's highly likely that silver is going to remain in a very strong position. So that's kind of a broader viewpoint. Like, I'm trying to take your type of position there and simply say that with this type of uncertainty, gold is certainly not going to be returning to its previous levels. And so maybe that's a good way for people to think about it, is keep the uncertainty factor. If there was an indicator for uncertainty, maybe there is.
That would be a wonderful new contract, David.
The uncertainty indicator.
Yes.
The David Williams uncertainty indicator.
They've tried to introduce electricity and the fertilizer and all kinds of black shrimp. There's a book of contracts that they've tried to introduce over the years. Uncertainty actually might get some play more so.
Yeah, it does seem to make sense. It's very similar. And in your business, Leslie, isn't there a saying, buy the rumor and sell the fact?
Absolutely.
And what is that rumor basically based on? It's based on the idea. And you can explain your version of it. Here's mine. As an example, if somebody like Martha Stewart, let's take her example, if Martha Stewart's stock is at a certain price today and she is going to go to jail because of something that she allegedly did, which did happen, and her stock starts to go down as the date, the known date for her to go to jail is coming, typically the rumor is that she's going to jail. So in that case, you can sell the rumor. If the market starts to go down, if any of your technical indicators indicate a downtrend, you sell that stock, and when Martha Stewart finally gets into jail, you buy those positions back and you buy the fact. The fact is that now she's in jail, you no longer want to be short. And the same thing is in reverse. If the market had been going up, you would have bought the rumor. Again, the rumor is she's going to jail, and at the date she goes into jail, you sell that. And if you take a look at Martha Stewart's stock, you'll see that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
I don't know the name of her company anymore. I can't remember it.
Omni Media,
Martha Stewart, Omni something. Anyway, Omni. That she could have said, Omni going to be in jail for a little while. Like, I'll be Omni. Little joke there. I'll stop. Okay. Well, anyway, if you take a look at the stock, if you take a look at the stock, you'll see that that was a great example of buy the rumor and sell the fact, or sell the rumor and buy the fact. And the same thing was true for with her getting out of jail, which the date was coming and the stock either rallied into that date or sold off into that date. And, Dwayne, we've talked a number of times in the past about the really, if Moses came down from the mountain with 10 trading rules, this one would probably be right at the top. This is something that's so powerful that people overlook if you're a stock trader or perhaps even a commodities trader. Would you not agree with that, Leslie, or have you seen that principle play out?
Oh, absolutely. I think the intermediate to more sophisticated traders will definitely play that out enormously. And I'm looking at her Martha Stewart Living on the Media, MSO, and right now trading at 461. So it's up 14 on the day. So it's not bad. So.
No, it's in pretty good shape.
Yeah, but the chart is a lot of volatility there.
It probably does. It's just a good example that you can't keep a good woman down. They you know, did what they could with her. She got out. She went right back to what she does best and took the hit and got right down to business. And we can all do that on our own respective levels in life. You know, she was a great example, I thought.
Isn't that amazing? We have such resiliency. And the trick is here in America, more than I've noticed with any other country, we make mistakes. Those that are willing to step up to the plate and say, hey, I've made a mistake. Here I am, and I'm ready to pay. I mean, those are the people that we embrace. We
that's
absolutely
right.
Embrace them. And
isn't
I think
that
that's a wonderful, wonderful sentiment for all the U.S. patriots, you know, because it's just amazing how resilient people can be in this lifetime. I mean, when you think about Tiger Woods, I mean, you think about so many different people, and I think that almost goes back to Dwayne and some of the quotes that we go through daily about forgiveness and sinning, and you know, basically, it's a wonderful thing within our country.
One thing I would like to say along with that is for people to learn, which I certainly have. Learn something from the fact that people tend to do good when they openly, willingly, and very quickly are able to take the hit.
Yes.
If you're not willing to take the hit and you're dodging your own action and you're hiding and obfuscating or whatever the words are, you know, you're purposely, even not to others, even to yourself, you end up elongating it, making it worse. And so if you're willing to take the hit, take a look at how many people have done that correctly right in front of all of us. You know, the Tiger Woods, the Martha Stewarts, and a number of other people I can't think of right now that have willingly said, okay, you got it, I'm taking the hit. They take the hit. So they turn around and they come right back strong. The people who don't come back so strong are the people who are spending a lot of time not taking the hit, trying to avoid having taken the hit. And excusing themselves for having had it, and on and on and on. The people that seem to turn around, and you can go, it would be interesting to get on the internet and go back and take a look at the people who really were willing to. I'd be willing to bet you'll see there's an enormously high success rate that part of what successful people do is they take the hit. That's what successful people do.
As a matter of fact, people that might be low in the celebrity readings or going through a phase where they're really not read or something like that, if they step up and admit something, the chances are they're not only embraced, but they're back in the headlines.
Right. No, exactly. And people sense when you're trying to hide it and you're trying to cover it up, and it makes people chase your little behind. It makes you get, you know, people, it just riles people up when they know you're hiding it, and they give you such wonderful forgiveness if you just come clean. So it's kind of an interesting thing, and that ties in, and this is not to turn this into anything political, but our current administration has never said that anything they've done is wrong. Everything they've done has worked beautifully. Every little program they put into place has been perfect. It's worked beautifully. We've saved jobs. We've saved money. We're pushing ahead, you know. But when things are wrong, they're not willing to take any hit at all. And that's not just true of this administration. This happened in the past as well. But I think it bodes well for people, whether they're little people like myself and any other person that you know, we might deal with on a daily basis, or big people like stars like Tiger Woods or even the President of the United States, when they're willing to take the hit, and then they are done with the hit, and they can move on. But if you don't take it, you're never really done with it, and all the people are chasing you to try to get you to take it. It's almost like the public is trying to make you finally come clean because that's the right thing to do. And this, one of the signs of successful people is they straight up take the hit when they have to, and before you know it, they're back right to where they were, they're doing real well, and they go on with their lives. So it's an interesting observation that I think that you had made, and I'm just expounding on it.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I don't know if Dwayne is still there, but I'm willing to become the radio show talk show host and invite others on. Whatever you need me to do, Dwayne. No.
How you doing, David?
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Great, great. Good way to start the week here.
So far, it is. We've got a nice little thing starting. Tell us how you're looking at this, Michael. How you think things are turning out, and do you have any ideas?
I'm still bearish under 72.5. 72, 72.5.
Okay.
It ran up to at 1080 and a quarter for a resistance, and that was the exact high this morning. And it occurred in a minor time of day, the first 30 minutes. Actually, the high was made about 20, just over 20 minutes into the day. So oftentimes you get, especially on a gap up type of run, look for a counter trend move to happen within the first 20 to 40 minutes, and that's pretty much, that happens quite often.
It does.
Normal days.
It does, and I want to mention to the listeners that our other friend, Michael, who is the day trader who trades in very, very large size, did exactly what you're saying. He sold into this morning's open pretty heavily and sold it down pretty good. So he had a pretty good trade today, doing just exactly what you just said, and for almost the exact amount of time that you said to do it. So,
good. I'm sure he made more money out of it than I did.
Well, but he may have made more money than all of us combined, but he also takes more risks than all of us are willing to. So, you know, it all is a risk and reward thing, and what's your condition for? How much, you're willing to take.
Exactly, yep. But, for me, it was perfect. Worked out nicely to start the week. Let's see. We have the Hindenburg omen. I don't know where Dwayne is. Dwayne's still here, but
yeah, I'm here. I mentioned it briefly this morning, but you can speak to that. I had to go research it, and you were already aware of it, so you can speak better to it.
Turn my volume up, Dwayne.
Yes, as loud as it goes, Mike.
There you go. It's on my side. I had to turn it up to hear you. Okay. Did you start to talk about that, Dwayne?
Yeah, I did a little bit, Mike. But I think you can speak to it better than I. You know what I had to go out and research it after you emailed me and brought it to my attention. I went and did some research. And what are your thoughts on the whole thing? Do you think it truly is a predictive tool?
I think it's interesting, but it would be the most well predicted advertised crash in the history of the market, I think. So I think the market's just got its own problems. A crash, I don't know what it would cause, but I just think a bear market, but a crash, it's going to take something to really scare them here. Some kind of break of a good technical level might do it, but right now I don't really see that happening. They stated that those conditions were present before each of the big down moves, which, it's kind of a heads up, be careful, whatever, but I wouldn't go out and bet the farm on the thing, on that one indicator.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the best thing anybody can take from it is that, it's a heads up, but beyond that, you got to have something else confirming it for you.
Right. Yeah, because, I mean, for instance, you know, in 1987, before the crash, I covered my shorts. I think I told you this before. Covered the short position, a good short position, on the Friday before the crash.
Yeah,
and,
you did tell me.
And I almost went long. So I'm grateful I didn't go long because of, you know, markets being oversold or whatever. But anyway, I, or the just-in-case kind of deal had, was, and then the market didn't, it hadn't been acting that well anyways, but I was in a short position from Friday still, carried over the weekend, and then this morning just gave like, well, this is just too good to pass up here, and so it all worked out. But it's, this, they say within 4 months, you know, that's kind of a not a precise time for a, you know, if they say a crash can happen within 4 months, so that stretches it out there.
Yeah, one of the articles I read talked about the latter part of September. So,
one thing I would like to interject, though, Dwayne or both of you, is that I don't think that is an outright forecast. I think it's more or less a vulnerability, very similar to what we talked about last week, that if the market got below, you know, 66, we would be vulnerable for this sharp, fast decline that we talked about. It wasn't an outright forecast. I think the Hindenburg is more of a vulnerability that the market has rather than a specific date, and that's why they have to say something like, well, maybe in the next 4 months, you know, we would be vulnerable to that type of movement, mm-hmm. without tying a date to it. But I don't think it's really an outright forecast. It's more of a vulnerability based on those conditions. And admittedly, they are a quite a set of conditions, aren't they? You know, it's not just one or two conditions. It's a whole book of conditions that have to happen.
Right. So. And, you know, the new highs, new lows is really interesting. I've been keeping these internal numbers since I started trading. And to see the new highs and new lows at about the same level is really unusual. Usually they're skewed with a lot of new highs and low number of new lows, or just the opposite. You don't, mm-hmm. you don't tend to see them pretty much equal, you know. So that's, you know, that doesn't happen that often in itself.
Right. Right.
Let alone the other conditions that needed to be met with this. So
Leslie had also brought up the idea that there's a kind of a potential self-fulfilling prophecy about these things, that somebody first notices the set of conditions, warns people about that, it gets to be news to people, and then it becomes, over time, a self-fulfilling prophecy. How do you feel about that idea?
Yeah, I can see that also. You know, they're talking about head and shoulders top on the weekly chart also. So you tie those two together, and you start to get groupthink. Well, we have a head and shoulders top, and we have a Hindenburg, and well, I'm going to pull all my money out of here, and then market starts going down, and it's like, I want to get out here before it's too late, and then before you know it, it's too late, and people are selling at the bottom. So,
right, yeah, too late occurs pretty quickly in a crash.
It's always best to sell and to sell when they're into strength, which is get out when you can, not when you have to. You know, it's kind of sell into strength
that.
And you buy into weakness. That's the way, you know. It's basically, that's as old fashioned as they come, is buy low, sell high. You sell into strength and you buy into weakness. So,
right. You have to time that strength, you know, ending pretty well, and you have to time the weaknesses ending, but yeah, no doubt. That's as old as trading itself.
Mike, I put up that weekly chart where people are talking about the head and shoulders pattern.
Okay.
And that right shoulder is a little lower than the left shoulder, which lends credence to the fact that it, you know, they always say the softer, the head and shoulders top, the softer that right shoulder, the better the signal, the more likelihood that you're going to have follow through. And in fact, the higher right shoulder tends to negate the pattern. So is the setup there? And do we have a price channel defined that would accommodate that? Oh, yeah. It's certainly there.
I really like your that channel, because you can see that the wedge, where the wedge broke, and then there was kind of a bounce back towards the area of the breakdown. That was at 1198 area. Actually, from there to just above that was the breakdown area, and then they resumed the downtrend. So I like your channel there. As far as I think the right shoulder, I usually say that it occurs on lighter volume, which certainly was the case. We had, I think, 3 or 4 days in a row where there's less than 1 billion shares traded, which hadn't happened for quite a while. You know, summer doldrums or whatever, it's still light volume for even, you know, this time last year.
Right. Well, I can't insert volume across the bottom, and I can't right click because my charts have, I had too many windows on another platform open, and so anyone who can see this gray square up here, this is where I would normally go to, you know, like put volume so we could demonstrate that we could volume, but I can't. And it's going to require rebooting my charts, and I don't want to do that during the show today, so we'll just carry on. But we can see the declining volume on this chart, which is a daily chart, doesn't, you know, show it as well. But going back to May, and as you said, you know, summer, vacation, big traders away in the Hamptons, whatever, declining volume. And we should see all that begin to reverse and pick up and change come early September. We'll see what kind of strength the market has. So, Mike, what are your levels on the upside? You think we're going higher today? You think we're going lower? We already seen the high. Already seen the low.
We may have seen the range for today if they stay over 1068.5. That was a level coming into today, and it was broken earlier, but they popped right back above it. So, I don't know, 1068.5 on the bottom. I had 1072 to 72.5. Here this afternoon. I really, that's a coin flip for me. I don't think the rally will stick. If we do get a rally, I doubt that it's going to stick. They pull the bids when they get a good run up. The bids tend to dry up, and no one wants to get caught buying at a top. But on the pullbacks, then the bids have been coming in. On Friday, that was the case. The character kind of changed for a while. Right around noon on Friday, the market had a good bid to it, had some buoyancy to it on the way up, and kind of stepped its way higher. But like I said, then you get up to this high area, they kind of, you know, you don't want to be caught buying up at the highs or at a resistance area, it seems to be, and then the pullbacks are catching a bid today. So if they let loose and take out that 68.5 again, that would not be good. And around the Dow has liked round numbers lately, so I don't know why that is, but 10,200 is kind of a area to watch too. David, I'd like to be interested in what your forecast you got going.
Sure. We are, the date of August 20th is an important date for a market bottom for us, and August 20th was Friday. All of our dates are plus or minus 1 unit of time. It looks to us like a bottom, so therefore prices would expect it to go higher. the thing that we talked about last week and what we just mentioned today for us, if we were to break below 66, and by breaking I mean actually closing on the day below 66, or worst case, another important level in our work, probably yours as well, is 63, if we were to close below those levels, that would leave the market very similar to the Hindenburg deal. It's not a straight outright forecast for a crash, but it would leave the market vulnerable in our work to a wide open break on the downside. So we're actually kind of in a very critical spot here in our work anyway, maybe yours as well, because you just said that it wouldn't be good if we got below certain levels. So we have a forecast for an August 20th bottom and then an initial 22-point advance off that low. So if you take the low there at 60, basically 62, at 22 points, it would bring us up to 84. And then we even have a continued potential advance as well. But all of this is against our own forecast for a weekly top on the week of August 9th. And although we've had a pretty good decline here, we're being cautious with the long signal as well until they give us a little bit more confirmation on the long side. So our outlook is any daily close below 66 or worst case 63 leaves the market vulnerable to a wide open multi-week, effectively a crash. If we are able to close today and tomorrow, today is the one day late period for the August 20th bottom, if we're able to close above 66 and worst case 63, then we are looking for short term some decently higher prices from here, because this is based off of what we call a daily roadmap, which is the same as hourly except that it's based on the daily chart. So it would be a multi-day advance off of the 66 bottom. So it's our caveat is we want to see the market stay above 66 in order to remain bullish here for the August 20th bottom. So really there's quite a bit, just by the way they traded today, you could say there's quite a bit of uncertainty in the market here, but they might firm up a little bit later and give all of us a signal that we're much more, we might be more willing to take. One thing also I'd like to mention, which I found this to be so true of myself and others that I've spoken to, is that it's almost always bad to have a bias on what you think the market's going to do, because that bias can make it difficult to trade the other direction when they show you that you're wrong. It's better to sort of suspend your bias and say, well, it's possible, you know, at least for me, if I get too married to the idea that the market's going to, as an example, go up, then I'm a whole lot less willing and I'm a whole lot less sharp on the gun, fast on the gun, fast on the draw, to trade correctly when they go against that bias. So, for me, anyway, I found out that it's best, no matter how strongly I feel about something, I'll mention it, I'll bring it out on the program, but I also try not to get too emotionally tied to that idea, because if they show me confirmation in the other direction, quite often that is even a better trade if you can get in it and take it. So I'm sure you've probably felt, maybe you have, maybe you haven't, on people holding a really strong bias on something.
I know, yeah, I know what you're saying there. I do, when I have all my indicators lined up in a row, I'll have, it's like a really, a real, like a heads up. This is a real heads up, and sometimes I'll flat out just take simple so thorough. Now, this is, like you say, the market action doing a certain thing. So to me, If I had a bullish bias, the reason for all my indicators were pointing higher, and I was looking for higher prices, the way the market has acted, not so keen here, and maybe this is the case here, I'd want to see it firm up above 72, and then maybe hold that on a pullback, and then that would kind of confirm my bullish bias, okay?
Right.
Is that the way, is that kind of the way you look at it?
Yeah, absolutely. If the market confirms something, then I'll trade it. But I won't get too emotionally attached to the idea, even if it's part of, a larger forecast or something that we really believe in. When I trade, for me, I trade as if I'm wrong. It's just something I've come to. You know, I actually, in my mind, I think to myself, or emotionally, I'm trading as if I'm wrong. That I think I've taken that to too great a level, or too I do that too much. But I think it's a good idea to do that, and to a certain extent, to trade as if you're wrong. Manage the position if you're wrong, but let the market let it run until you go to your targets and some things that are important to you. And that's something that I've struggled with, because I will get out of positions much earlier than my own work will tell me that the market's going. And I've gotten a little bit better at it recently, but it still is something that I have to work with, because I lean too heavily on the thing I just mentioned, which is to trade as if I'm wrong. And that simply means that I'm willing to get out if the market doesn't do, you know, if it gives me a little scare, I get out and I run, rather than stay in with the position. And I've mentioned this a number of times. This is, everybody has certain Achilles heels that they're going to have to work through. You may not know them until you start practicing trading, but you'll find that some of them come up. And conversely, everybody also has certain strong points. And so what I have found is that it's better to trade your strong points and slowly over time try to work out your weak points than it is to trade your weak points and only once in a while, you know, rely on your strong points. It's much better to rely on your strong points, your naturally occurring strong points, than it is to do it the other way around. Go ahead, Michael. You were going to say something, I think.
No, I just was going to. No. I was just going to add that that's kind of the case with me. With I trade, you know, like you said. I assume that I enter the position and then I need to be proven correct within a reasonable amount of time, or I'll step to the sidelines and reassess. Where now that you're kind of like thinking, well, I'm gonna give it more room to actually work out, and that, and not step aside and take another look. Is that what you're trying to?
No, I don't know. I am willing to get back into a position. One of my stronger points is that I naturally am willing to re-enter a position after being taken out, either by a stop or by my own hand. So I am willing to get back into a position. I actually prefer, on some of these larger moves, to be stopped out, because it means that a lot of people are being stopped out, most likely, and that most people are not ready to step back in. And I found that some of the best trades I've made, at least by reviewing my own trading history, has been where I have been stopped out of a position and it hurts, and then the market suddenly and miraculously reconfirms everything needed to make me believe in the position in the first place that we were just stopped out on. And many, many people, all you have to do is just slap them once and they don't want to play anymore. And one of my natural points was I do want to play more, because I believe that that was just a move to get me out. It's, excuse me. So some of my bigger trades in my, you know, history of doing this, and best trades, have been from just such a movement, where we talk about a lot about the market's tricky before a big move. Well, that trickiness gets bigger the move that's coming, and a lot of people will get stopped out of something, and then they don't want to get in anymore. They don't want to play. They don't want to put it in. That's something that I will do, is I will get back into the market. But I don't know that I would. I usually, when I place an order, I place my stop. I absolutely do that. I place a stop every time. And if the market hits that stop, then obviously I wasn't as right as I thought I was about the situation and the market. If I don't place a stop and the market continues to move down, it gets more difficult to get out of that position willingly, to what Leslie and I talked about, take the hit. It becomes harder and harder to take the hit, whereas if you take the hit initially and it hurts right then, you're not only free of the hit, you just took it, so you're now over that, you're also free to trade both long or short in the market, a condition you wouldn't have if you stayed with that long position. Now you have to hold that and miss other opportunities, et cetera, et cetera. So this isn't about being right as much as it is about trading correctly, managing the risk, and then being right, because people want to be right first and always. But I think we can both agree, at least I'll say from my viewpoint, that some of my bigger months in actual gains, dollar gains have been where I've actually lost more in terms of percentages than I normally do. In other words, my win-loss ratio that a lot of people look at and say, wow, that's really important. You only lose, you know, 3 times out of 10 or whatever the number is. My win-loss ratio may go very, very far against me, but on some of those months, I actually have some of my bigger months because I had to take those losses in order to then now re-enter and be correct and not have let the market go unnecessarily against the position, et cetera. And then when you're right and they really run them, you can hold, you know, the market really tends to run very quickly in the direction of surprise. And so I like to try to trade that surprise as best as I can. I hope that makes sense, you know.
Sure does, yep, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, everybody's got their own style. My friend Michael, this other Michael that is the day trader who trades in huge size, he traded about 7,000 contracts on Friday. I spoke to him. He's much more willing than most people to add to a losing position, something that we've all heard is not a good thing to do. But he has learned, he has developed a trading style around that. He will stop himself out time after time, but he will also allow a position under certain conditions that are known conditions. He's not just shooting from the hip, but he will allow a position to go against him and even add to that position, which is what he did today. He actually came in short today from Friday. The market was against him, and he added to that position. And then we had a really good sell-off this morning, and he actually ended up very nicely ahead. He would have had to have taken a larger loss if that went against him, but he knows his own system well enough to know when that the conditions are potentially correct for him to add to a losing position. So there really can't be any super hard and fast rules that it's just always wrong to do this or always wrong to do that, because some people develop very active and very effective trading strategies around principles which are generally considered to be very dangerous in the market, one of which is to add to a losing position. But you better practice that and know what you're doing before you jump on that. Because
yeah, that's
as far
kind
as
of
I'm
one of the rules
adding
that
to a
Moses
position,
would come down with written on the tablet.
That would be one of them. That's correct. Try not to do that. You know.
Don't try this at home.
I might have to step away here.
All right, Mike.
Adrian.
Okay, Michael. Nice to chat with you.
Nice to talk with you guys. I'll check in later Wednesday, Dwayne.
Okay, anytime. You know, your link and
anytime.
Password
okay.
are good for the entire week, so anytime there's a slow point in the markets or you just want to chat, pop on in.
Okay, great. Sounds good.
Well,
I guess I get the
sure
format now. Okay. Have a good day, guys.
All right, guys.
Okay, Mike. Bye-bye. See you soon.
Bye.
Well, Dwayne, there you are.
Okay.
We get all the good guys on first, and we get them out of the way, and now we can talk.
So what do you got going on?
Nothing really, just watching the market quietly here, and you know, I'd like to make some money today, and I'm waiting for an opportunity to do that. I didn't come in short, and my particular position, which I attempted to short, wasn't filled, so we missed that, or I missed it. So we're waiting right here to see. I'm really more interested in a little bit in the longer term, the potential for the roadmap that we talked about earlier, and very interested if they were to break the 66 or 63 level that we talked about. Just as a re-explanation of it, why are those levels so important right now? Primarily because there's nothing in our work below the market right now that would effectively stop it from crashing. It's in a particular position, in some ways, like the Hindenburg, where I explained on Friday that there are no, at this point, important returning waves that we've talked about, the reflected wave idea, that would support the market if it did break those levels. And that leaves it vulnerable, as opposed to a forecast, but it leaves it vulnerable to a wide open break if we got below 66. So I'm willing to trade today higher prices. If we had an hourly close above 73, that would certainly be a pretty good indication that higher prices were coming today, just as an example. I'm just throwing that out there as something for people to maybe think about if that ties in with their own work. And really, that's about it. Those are two big setups. We have, you know, a setup for an advance, as I mentioned before, to the 84 to 85 level short term, and then much higher than that as well. all the way up to, in our work, the 1106 level, which is, you know, pretty good up there. It's a pretty good run. Is that right? Let me just double check that.
1105.
Oh, thank you, Bert. Bert's on my shoulder. He's just whispering in my ear there. Oh, thank you, Bert. You know, no one even knows Bert's there.
You know, the other thing, to keep this in mind, Friday they really could have killed this thing.
They really could have. They could have killed it. That's a great point. Go ahead.
You know, they could have killed the market, and they didn't. I mean, we had payroll weekly claim numbers, you know, at 500,000.
Yes.
And the market, you know, fought a good fight on Friday. They really could have clobbered it, and they didn't. So I think the fact that we held, I mean, it's like on a daily, if we hold that Friday's low, I think in a small way we could, you know, put some kind of rally into effect here. And, you know, the bearish sentiment is growing, you know, and the charts are saying down and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when the bearish sentiment is growing too much, too fast, usually that's when you get your surprises.
Right, not, on the upside.
Right. Now, I'm not, you know, I'm bearish too, but I think the fact that the market is holding here and trying to hold, you know, warrants, you know, we could surprise people and pop out of the hole here. So.
Oh, no question about it. I think that's a great point. Friday's session did trade in such a manner, especially early in the day, that it was indicating that there was a lot of fear in the market. And they were trading below important levels. They were testing levels. And just the manner in which they were trading, I think, is a great observation that they really had it in their hands on Friday to really break this thing. And they didn't. And this is, you know, what we're talking about now isn't so much purely technical. It's more of a broader stroke. You know, we're looking at the market in a sort of market viewpoint way, just where you're saying, gosh, they really did have an ability. They did trade strangely. They did have a lot of fear. And they weren't able to break it down. And today we popped up, and we're still in a position potentially for higher. Once we get past the one-day late period for the turning point, which would normally be a bottom on the 20th, and today is that one-day late, once we get past this and we are above 66, then we have a much better read on where the market is right now. When we're in the one-day late, we still actually could, if you take a look at a daily chart, if Duane wanted to put one up, we actually could say that today put in a top for a further decline, and we want to get past the point where we can say that because today spiked up on a daily chart. Duane, if you want to flip that, if you can, and then get me a cup of coffee, please, mate.
Daily chart, if I can.
Just joking.
Yeah, there's the daily, right?
Is that the daily?
No,
that's
a weekly.
No, it's weekly, and I can't get over.
It's all right, Duane. It's not that important.
A chart. I got to. Oh, wait. Here we go. No, I'm still not going to do it. I'm going to have to reboot.
Okay. Don't worry. It's fine. I'm just making a note of the fact that we need to get past the 1 day late in order to really start to confirm the up move. So people have to be cautious with our roadmap. And again, this is a daily roadmap, not an hourly. Daily means that it can take several days, and there's a lot of movement in between. These are harder to trade, but they pay off bigger. So there's always a trade-off. You notice that in life. There's always a balance. There's always a trade-off. And this is one of those situations where these daily roadmaps come up. This is a great signal. It really is. It's a very good signal. But I want to see us get past today above 66 on a daily close, and I want to see us trade tomorrow, ultimately getting above 73 and firming up here. And then we will have a nice position, and we'll see the initial target up 22 points and then potentially substantially further. So we're hoping to see a little bit more firming up here. And then, of course, if we don't see that and we start to break down, the way that markets usually crash is they get very agitated and they get very difficult for all the things that you normally watch and understand to really see that happen. And you either have to stand aside or you just have to get in. People who are trying to wait for what's normal looking to them to occur in order to be in a big crash, you know what? You're really not going to see it, but maybe you'll see it long after the fact when you study the aftermath of the whole thing. Oh, we could have gotten in here, we could have gotten in here, but you're not going to see it in real time. It's just the nature of how the market works. So at some point, if they are going to crash, if they are going to get below 66 and they start trading down there, if you're waiting for something that looks familiar, generally speaking, the familiar doesn't show up during a crash. It just doesn't look normal. It just does weird things, and it just gets down to business, and you just have to be in. So you have to remember that's generally what happens. It's a truth not just for myself, but it's a truth for just about everybody. Most people who've been trading for a while will agree wholeheartedly that once these bigger moves get underway, they just haul, and you have to really just get in at some point and be willing to take the bigger risk. They don't set it up as easy as they do these little swings of the hourly and the daily and stuff like that. So keep that in mind in case we do break down. So, Bert, with all that, I'm sure you have some commentary about the markets as well today, as quiet as they are.
You guys summed it all up. Leslie hit the few of the points this morning. Dwayne, I emailed you that Hindenburg report. It's got some of the graphs and stuff on there.
I'll throw them on. I'll add some of those graphs to the post I put up on Saturday.
Mike Reed talked about the weekly volume figures. There's a graph on there showing the weekly volume, how it was declining on that right shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be a good graphical explanation. Other than that, across the board, we kind of just watch a paint dry, really.
We are. One thing. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
This morning, the market looked like it was really going to get up and at them, and then did an hourly reversal, and now it's been more of a defensive mode, really.
Mm-hmm.
The key is the NASDAQ today. If the NASDAQ can grow some legs, you got the Dow wants to go higher. The S&P looks like it wants to go higher. It's the NASDAQ that's keeping the cap on it. So I don't know if there's some individual issues that's keeping the NASDAQ lower today, but if the NASDAQ can catch a bid, you might see this market spring out of the hole. So.
One thing I was going to mention that Leslie had mentioned, and it's just an idea. This is simply a counter idea to her idea. A lot of people will say something like, let's take the Hindenburg example, this thing that we're talking about, the indicator that this fellow came up with, and that it kind of grows legs, that everybody knows about it, everybody knows what the indication is, and that puts everybody in fear, and then therefore the market ends up being a self-fulfilling prophecy. But the truth of the matter is that when most people's sentiments are one way, the market tends to go the exact opposite way.
Yeah.
And that kind of goes against the theory that people tend to believe in these things and then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. It would have difficulty becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, since when sentiment grows very bearish, the market tends to go up. When sentiment tends to grow very bullish, the market tends to go down. It's not always true, but that would be my answer to somebody who says that the idea that this indicator has been around for a while and it may have worked a few times, that it causes people to create a self-fulfilling prophecy. I don't really think it works that way myself. I think it's actually quite a bit different, that I think most big market moves are not only counter to what most people think are happening, it's an outright surprise to what most people think. That's how I think the market really works. It actually surprises most people. And if it was so easy for people to just all believe something and for the market to do it, we've got a lot of crashes we can look at in the past that don't follow that theme at all. That the fact is that nobody saw it coming.
Right. And that'd be too easy.
It'd be too easy, right.
If everyone just said, all right, we got this bearish hook reversal or head shoulders top, it's time to get short. Come on, they have to throw a few curveballs at you.
They do. If it was easy enough for somebody to say, well, look, the bearish sentiment is really high right now. A lot of people know about this indicator. A lot of people know about Elliott Wave. A lot of people are, everyone's calling for a crash. Well, guess what? That's not when crashes happen.
Even Glenn Beck, who's not known to be a market oracle of any kind, he's even talking about the Hindenburg omen. That's why I put the video I put up of him.
I saw that.
On the blog. That was more tongue-in-cheek than anything else, because that's, and that was in Mike's initial email to me on Saturday. He goes, there's so many people suddenly talking about this thing, kind of diminishes the possibility that it's going to, accurately reflect anything.
Mm-hmm. Once in a great while, well, put it this way, another way of saying this maybe would be to say that humanity as a whole is never really on top of big world changes and big, sharp, fast reversals and things. The housing crash caught everybody off guard, except for a very few people. These are the kinds of things that happen as surprises. They're not planned or timed by a calendar that people all can look at and say, well, this is when the really bad stuff's going to happen. Most people are caught by surprise. And honestly, that includes most traders are caught by surprise by these market moves as well. If you, Bert, you're privy to brokerage you know, you work for a brokerage, you probably maybe could say that that's maybe the case, that a lot of people are caught off guard by these bigger moves. Some people were short on, as an example, in 87. They happened to just be short, the market crashed, and they had a great gain on their money. But it wasn't that the majority of people were short going into the 87 crash. The majority of people weren't short going into the housing crisis, as an example, and on and on and on. So these big moves tend to occur in very tricky ways. That's why I was saying before, don't look for your normal indications when the crash really, if it does come, comes, because they don't show it to you that way. You ultimately have to just get in and take the risk. They just don't pay that much money out and let you have your simple, you know, method line up perfectly. Now, after the fact, people can go in and find some time frame and some chart and some set of indicators that perfectly indicated that crash for them. But they don't see that in real time. It's just the nature of how these things work. So they usually come as surprises, and they usually come as a surprise, that is, to the current sentiment. If the current sentiment is very bullish, that's when crashes occur. If the current sentiment is very bearish, that's when advances occur. As a general rule, it's not always, it's not perfect, but it's a whole lot more often than it's not. That's my opinion on it. So the idea that something becomes self-fulfilling and all that stuff, I don't really buy into that, because that would mean that it would be obvious to everybody, and it's, that's just not the case.
Perfect. I think that's true. I see it from my end all the time, because when the sentiment grows to either side, you can say, uh-oh, here we go. Something's going to change here. You can just kind of feel it. So,
and exactly. And when the sentiment is very bearish, it also plays havoc with us, and it makes it difficult to want to be long. There's, again, all these psychological things that you have to learn to go against the crowd in order to really make the serious money, you know. So the smaller the time frame you trade on, the less money you're going to make, but the easier the trades to a certain extent. And the larger the time frame you trade on, the longer it takes to make money, but you make more money, but it gets trickier as well. The moves against you get bigger, and risk and reward just tend to run together. They're two sides to the same coin. So if you're going to make really big money, you're going to have to take substantial risks to get that money. It's just the way that the system works, with the rare exception, you know.
Yep. True.
So there you are. So,
all right, guys.
Dwayne,
My charts are completely frozen now, so I'm going to have to. So we're gonna close out the show. We've been at this a couple hours, and it is a couple hour radio show.
Okay.
So what, for those who like to hang out in the chart room after the regular broadcast, I'm going to attempt to take down my charts, put them back up without closing the webinar. But I have a feeling I'm probably going to have to close the webinar and reboot. However, your link and your password will allow you, in other words, if you see on your screen that the webinar is ended, give it 15, 20 minutes, half hour, and then you can log back in, and I'll have it up and running again. So,
well, great, Dwayne. We'll see how things work out into tomorrow. It's a pleasure to be on the show. Bert, nice to chat with you as well,
yeah,
and all the other guests.
All right, great.
So,
all right, we'll see you guys tomorrow.
We'll see you tomorrow, Dwayne.
All right. I'm sorry. All right, I got preoccupied. I'm trying to read an email. I'm trying to troubleshoot my computer. Did you guys?
And you still didn't get me that cup of coffee yet.
Did you guys
say
you're leaving now?
Well, you just got through saying that show's only a two-hour show and it's over.
Is there anything relevant that, you know, that you'd like to add
to the show today?
Yeah.
Well, Bert, is there anything relevant that you'd like to add to the show today?
Get me on it.
I don't want to kick anybody
in
the curb here.
Yeah, I was just in the background. You guys covered everything. It was real quiet.
It is very quiet.
I wanted
Dwayne,
to throw a few laughs. You know,
you throw a good in there. Dwayne, you're trying to make a mountain out of a molehill today. There's just really nothing there. It's just a quiet market. I think you're just lonely. I think you just want some company. And I think that studio of yours is the walls are coming in around you.
Actually, my godson just came into the studio, and he's leaving to go back to Uganda today. He's got a stopover in Colorado. Come here.
How do you get to Uganda? Just out of curiosity. I mean, I always wonder about a trip like that. Do you just go to your local airport and just sign up for a flight to Uganda?
Hang on, I'll tell you. Little D, say hi to my friend David.
Hi.
And my friend.
And what's his name?
Hi.
And what would you like to tell them about your visit here to America? Did you have a good time?
Yeah.
What did you have yesterday for your very first time?
I was going in Uganda when
milkshake.
I...
Get a milkshake, dude.
Hmm?
Milkshake.
I've been buying milkshake.
That is right. Now, how old is he? How old is he, Dwayne?
He's 4. And his name is Dwayne.
Well,
and he's an
that's
American
a strange
citizen.
Coincidence.
He's an American
citizen.
Well,
have a safe trip, bud.
And he
that's
was born
sure.
here in America. And in 2 years, he's going to come back when he's 6 and ready to start school. And we're going to, he's going to live with us and go to school here in America.
That is wonderful.
You're a good man, Dwayne.
He is so smart. I mean, it's just, we'll be watching, and he's so musically inclined, and I'm so unmusically inclined. But we'll be sitting and watching a commercial, and he'll see a commercial for the first time, and he'll just sit and watch it. And then, you know, as it cycles through 45 minutes later, that same commercial comes on. He'll start singing.
Uh-huh.
He'll start singing the jingle. In key, perfect pitch. And I'm like, how do you do that? And he's just dancing, and I mean, yeah. It's been he's been here now almost 2 months. So yeah, I'm gonna really miss him. He's becoming part of my day-to-day life.
That's difficult to do. Is once you know, it's hard not to feel that connection with children. And then when they leave, you know, you're just back to your house. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so when does he come back? When he's 6 years old?
Yeah, that's our plan. Is that he's 4 now. He just turned 4, and he had to come back to the U.S. to do some passport issues because he is unofficially an American citizen, so he has to return to the States periodically.
Okay,
he lives with his parents in Africa, but at the age of 6, that's the plan now. He'll come here and he'll be educated in America.
Did you say that he is a U.S. citizen?
He is.
Oh, okay, because I was saying, if he isn't, there's a really easy way to get in. It's just through the Arizona border. I don't know if you heard about it. There's a like wide open little humor there, Dwayne.
No, he was born right down the street here. His mother, when it was time for him to be born, she came, and we took her to St. Joe's Hospital in the U.S., and I know a lot of people out there in the audience are screaming, foul, foul, you ran afoul of the immigration law. It's my godson. Say whatever you want. I don't care.
Yeah.
At least he didn't come in over the fence. He flew in.
That's right.
It was all legitimate. So some may say, "Yeah, well, you, yeah, but you were, yeah, I'm the last airbender." Okay. So anyway.
All right, Dwayne. Well, listen, you have a great weekend with him, overnight, and we'll talk with you tomorrow.
All right.
Pleasure to be on the show, and Bert, you have a great day as well. We'll see where we are tomorrow. We'll put it all together.
Best all right, guys.
All right. Guys. I'll talk to you then.
Bye.
All right. See you.
Bye-bye.
All right, friends. This was quite the haphazard Monday edition of Prosperity for God's People. I'm so glad you tuned in. I'm going to attempt to reboot my computer and my platform. Now, just, you know, in case you didn't message me and in case you haven't heard me say it, what happened? TradeStation and DT Pro, they don't always work well together. They do if you don't try to do too much, okay? It's obvious that I try to do too much in TradeStation as it is, and I'm going to have to fix that because I don't use all of this on any given day. But they're all here because I could use them all on any given day. Like, for instance, I don't ever bring this one out, but we could make trades off of this all day long. Where is it? Nope. That's not it. Although we could make trades off of that. That's not the one I was looking for. Well, it's the closest I got. But as you can see, this is Michael's 810. I have another chart. Maybe I deleted it. Oh, no, there it is. Yeah. This one here, I like trading off of this one. So all you got to do is just buy. Just buy the pullbacks. Until it no longer makes sense to buy the pullbacks, and then you try to sell them, and then when that doesn't work, you just go back to buying them. Yeah, and after X number of trades, you're going to get it wrong. But here, you start shorting. These are pretty big moves, too. Short it again. Short it again. Short it, get it wrong. Buy it. Buy it here. Get it right. Buy it here. Get it wrong. And now that was without taking into consideration this or this or this or this. You bring all of those into play along with that. And you rule out some really good trades, but you lock in some not so good trades. So maybe someday we'll go through this. But for now, I'm going to bid you all adieu. I do thank you for tuning in. Whoever you are, and I will attempt to relaunch the webinar and the charts within the half hour for anyone that wants to pop back in. So, as I was saying, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Pastor Dwayne Reeves, and his guests. This information should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed security broker or financial planner before making any investment decisions. You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.